couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films In the Heights, Loki, Awake, Wish Dragon, Time Wasters, and Peter Rabbit 2, The Runaway. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring George A. Romero's lost film, The Amusement Park. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big piece of news that hit this week is depressing for me, and that is because Rob Zombie has been tapped to do a movie version of The Munsters. Now, this had been rumored for a while, actually. I'm really conflicted when it comes to Rob Zombie, because on one hand, I really appreciate the fact that he's a fan. This guy loves horror movies. I mean, he named himself after Bela Lugosi's film White Zombie. And he is so into horror, and I love his passion. I love the fact that he is adamantly pro-horror movie, and he just wants to make horror movies that he enjoys. With that said, he's a terrible filmmaker. His stuff is so unpleasant. I mean, I know there's people who love The Devil's Rejects, and there's a lot of admiration for House of a Thousand Corpses, but those movies are, first of all, that whole series is derivative from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and not in a good way. I mean, it's almost a mimicry at certain points, and his stuff, like what he did, the Halloween franchise was such a mess. He is such a bad filmmaker. I mean, some of his movies have swerved into decent, like something like The Lords of Salem. But yeah, a lot of his movies, especially like, you know, like 31 and so, oh, these are terrible films. And so now he's going to be making The Munsters. And I guess it's supposed to be a family-friendly version, but does he know how to do that? What is family-friendly when it comes to Rob Zombie? Now, we might end up stumbling into something that's actually kind of decent, like when Eli Roth, who's best known for doing very visceral graphic horror, did The House with a Clock in Its Walls, and I remember watching that and going, golly, this is actually a neat little fun Goosebumps level movie for kids. Maybe he'll step up to the plate. But what I'm terrified is that we're going to get The Munsters, and of course, Sherry Moon Zombie's going to be playing the vampire of the wife character. And he's probably going to get Bill Moseley to play Herman Munster. And they're all going to be like vicious, awful, horrible, unpleasant, white trash awfulness. And he doesn't have the whimsy. You need a little bit of whimsy to be the Munster. Because the whole point of the Munsters is they were a good, solid American family. They just happened to be monsters. So it's the same thing with the Addams Family. These were just good, solid American values, except they happen to be monsters and they were often misunderstood, but they were wholesome in the strangest way. So I don't know what a toned down Rob Zombie's going to look like, but like I said, I admire his passion. The next piece of news I want to hit really quickly is about the box office. I talked in depth about it last week. I also want to hit a couple things this week. We had The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It come out. And that was also similar to Cruella, where it was also available at home. The difference was you got The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It with your subscription service to HBO Max, and you had to pay for Cruella. What's interesting, though, is Cruella still made $11 million last weekend in the theaters. A Quiet Place Part 2 made almost 20, and then The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It made 24. That's actually not bad. 24 million for a movie like The Conjuring that's already being beamed into homes? That's not bad. And here's the thing. There's a lot of hidden box office in this. And Warner Brothers probably has it mostly invested, because you can kind of figure it out with Disney by figuring out how many people downloaded it. But Warner has that hidden box office, and it's absolutely driving box office reporters insane, because box office isn't directly for The Conjuring. I think there's a lot of people who are holding on to their HBO Max subscriptions so they have that day and date option. Now, HBO Max, because it's like $15 or $16 a month, they've started an ad-supported service, which is, I think, like $10 a month. So it's cheaper, and it's actually lower than something like Netflix. But what it does not have is it does not allow you to do the theatrical day and date thing. I still think Warner Brothers wants to get away from that because they want to just get that box office money so they can count it directly. Otherwise, you're just kind of, it's rolling into the subscription. But what you got to realize, if you got 10 million accounts for HBO Max at $15 a month, that's $150 million a month that just comes in no matter what. And yeah, a lot of people are watching Friends and old WB stuff and Warner Brothers movies and stuff off of HBO, but they're also watching the Warner Brothers movies. So, you know, a certain amount of that can at least be tracked back to the movies. And you're going to see it because when Warner Brothers stops doing that day and date release stuff, you're going to see those subscriptions plummet. You're going to see a lot of people cancel. If I were just a regular consumer, I would probably pay for HBO Max just for those day and date releases, and I would consider scaling back or removing the service altogether if that didn't come included with the package. And already Paramount Plus and Peacock are playing around with these ideas as well, because they've got their animated films. They're doing sort of the Pixar Disney model of adding the family-friendly films to their service. Paramount Plus is going to be getting a movie I'm going to talk about in a little bit, and Peacock is going to be getting the Boss Baby sequel. And there's also some exclusive features on those. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Reminiscence, and it is coming to theaters and HBO Max on August 20th.
When the waters began to rise and war broke out, nostalgia became a way of life. There wasn't a lot to look forward to. So people began looking back. Nothing is more addictive than the past.
She's moved on, and you should too.
People don't just vanish.
The first thing I thought of when I saw this trailer was Inception. Now, part of it is because it's a flooding coastal city due to global warming and rising ocean levels, but it looks very similar to the shots of the deepest dream state in Inception. And even when people start interacting and talking to each other, it has a feel. It doesn't feel like Christopher Nolan, but it feels like somebody's trying to emulate Christopher Nolan in a lot of ways. This might be interesting. I'm a little skeptical of movies that come out in August that are supposed to be high concept things, because those are usually either big budget sci-fi spectaculars in the summer or in the tentpole releases. You know, sometimes these movies are overly ambitious but don't play out. But we'll see in August. We just got a couple months for that. It's just 2 months away. The next one I want to hit really quickly is a movie that is an adaptation of a TV series. Very, very popular. It's going to be huge. Paw Patrol, the movie.
When all hope seems lost.
Let's get out of here!
When heroes
help!
Are needed more than ever.
Ah!
Our fate is in their paws.
A dog?
Actually, sir, I'm a puppy.
That's even worse.
You're in shock, so I'm not gonna take that personally.
Whoa! Welcome to our new headquarters.
What's funny is I was talking to another parent recently, because my son just graduated high school, and I was talking to some of the other parents who had kids around or in his graduating class. And we were like, you know, you have about a 3-year window to remember what kids' shows are on, because they cycle through them so quickly. And the stuff that my kids watched when they were little, the kids don't even know exists now. So Paw Patrol is like the latest big thing. It's what Dora the Explorer was and Blue's Clues was when my kids were growing up. So Paw Patrol is a big deal. It's very popular. It's going to also go on Paramount Plus, which I mentioned earlier. Paramount Plus is going to be doing this a lot because they're trying to generate their numbers, because they finally got all their eggs in a basket right when the pandemic restrictions were releasing, and they didn't get that foothold that Disney and HBO Max got during the pandemic. Anyways, that'll be cute. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to see it, but we'll see. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Loki and Peter Rabbit 2, The Runaway. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the reviews, not with a movie review, but a very cinematic review, we'll say. And that is Loki, a new limited series on Disney+. After the 2012 version of Loki escapes with the Tesseract, he finds himself enlisted into the service of the Space-Time Police to fix problems in the timeline.
We protect the proper flow of time.
You picked up the Tesseract, breaking reality.
I want you to help us fix it.
Why me?
I need your unique Loki perspective.
Do I get a weapon?
Nah.
It is adorable that you think you could possibly manipulate me.
My description was rather vague, and I did that on purpose because I think the best way to experience Loki, the series, is to watch it. You don't want somebody to explain it to you. And it is going to take some time to pay attention to. Your average viewer is going to easily get lost in this, and that's okay, because it's going for the wide audience. Do you remember 10 years ago when Inception came out, or 20 years ago when The Matrix came out, how much those movies confused the average viewer? I remember Conan O'Brien had a bit, but it was real. There was a class, a community college class, he found somewhere about understanding The Matrix. Now, granted, The Matrix is a little bit heady, and it does kind of have a mind-bending story, but I was never confused by The Matrix, and part of that's because I grew up reading science fiction and seeing science fiction movies and reading science fiction comics and reading science fiction stories. So the idea of time travel and alternate realities and virtual reality and even stuff like that, I'd seen enough of stuff about that that I could wrap my brain about that. But the same thing happened in Inception. When Inception came out in 2010, people were like, oh my God, it's so hard to understand. I'm like, no, it's not. It's a dream within a dream within a dream. It's a stair step. How is that hard to understand? But apparently there's this huge segment of the population that had trouble understanding it because they didn't grow up with science fiction. And one of the things that the Marvel Universe is doing is they're going to some pretty bizarre places. And we already saw that with WandaVision. WandaVision is testing the waters on this. Actually, Avengers Endgame kind of tested the waters, saying, can we do a time travel story and get people with it and not make it this whimsical, goofy thing like Back to the Future? What these TV series are doing is they're priming the pump so that they can get to the later series like Doctor Strange 2 and the next Thor movie and the next Guardians of the Galaxy movie, where they're really going to get heady and kind of goofy with some of this stuff. And so what Loki does is it explains how that part of this Marvel Universe works. Now, the first episode, which has been available since Wednesday on Disney+, it's all background. It is all explanation. The entire episode is explaining how this series is going to work. And they throw a lot at you, but it's so well written that it's fun to watch because you go along with Loki. Because even though Loki's a god, or, you know, a godlike creature from Asgard, he's had very limited experience. You know, he's dealt with Thanos and he's dealt with some other titans, but really he's just this megalomaniacal god. And then it's him looking at this larger universe, realizing there's something much bigger. And so he's trying to figure out and digest what's going on around him. And most of the entire episode is him stuck in this, it's called the Time Variance Authority. It's the organization that is sort of like the Time Police. So this has shades of Doctor Who and the Time Lords to it, but it's Marvel's own brand for it. But it's setting things up so we can watch a movie like Doctor Strange, The Multiverse of Madness, and not have to have a half hour explaining what multiverses are. Like, do you remember that scene in Avengers Endgame where the Hulk's trying to explain how the timeline split off? That's very compact, and there was a lot they had to do in that movie, and they could only explain that much, and that got you through Avengers. This is an entire episode of that. You can't spend an hour in a movie explaining how things are going to work, but you can in a TV show. And it's very, very smart how Disney's putting this together. I absolutely loved this because it kept the punchiness and the fun and the cool nature of Marvel, and it also opens up the universe to incredible potential and seeds the later stories. We, like I said, you had similar things going on with WandaVision, which is a little different than like Falcon and the Winter Soldier, because the Captain America movies have been a little bit more sort of pragmatic international political thrillers. And so you didn't get that with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but you really get that with Loki, because this is setting up the mystical element. You remember when you saw Thor? That first Thor, 10, 12 years ago, it was a little bit hard to wrap your brain around, because there was a lot of stuff happening in the movie that were arguably somewhat confusing. And you don't have to worry about that now, because I think the general audience has been acclimatized to that. And that's good, because now we can watch bigger movies. Now, the other thing that makes this thing work is, I mean, they do it like a movie. Heck, this thing's in 2.35 ultra widescreen format. This is like it was projected, but it's being put on the Disney Plus service. And it's got movie stars. I mean, it's got Tom Hiddleston as Loki. And you've got Owen Wilson as one of the guys in here. You actually have bona fide movie stars who are going to find their way into the Marvel Universe in the movies. And that's good. So, yeah, I am a huge fan of Loki. Get through that first episode, and it's fun to watch. I don't think it's a chore at all. But then when you get to the next episode next week, I've had a chance to see that one. I'm not going to say anything about it, aside from the fact that it really kind of hits the ground running with the actual story. And then you get to see at least the direction they're heading with this. And you will totally see how it's going to be tying into the future Marvel movies. So, right now, Loki is a triumph, and I absolutely loved it. Totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's quickly swerve by Peter Rabbit 2, The Runaway. After feeling unappreciated, Peter Rabbit flees the garden to a place where his ways of mischief are admired.
Are you the author?
It's really the rabbit story. I just wrote it down.
Look, Dad, it's Peter Rabbit. He's a little naughty.
What?
Are you Peter?
That depends who's asking.
Stay out of trouble.
Told you he has it in for me. He was talking to all of us.
I'm talking to you, Peter, specifically. Stay out of trouble. Trouble. Trouble.
Who they think I am, maybe I'd be better off without them.
I'll admit I don't know what this movie's about. I haven't seen it. This is the thing that's so frustrating as the restrictions are lifting now. Over the last year and a half, Hollywood studios have been good at providing screeners for the movies that I wanted to see. All of them, the big ones, went out of their way to set up a platform so they could show me movies. Well, the problem with that is then they showed that there is a way to show you the movie at home. They didn't provide screeners for Peter Rabbit 2. They did not do screenings for Peter Rabbit 2. I don't know anyone who's seen this movie. They may have done some sort of private screenings and word of mouth screenings, but us critics were not allowed into them. So you know what that tells me? This movie's absolute hot garbage. The first movie barely worked. I mean, it kind of ruined the Beatrice Potter stories. But I could forgive that for just being this goofy talking animal movie. This thing looks just worse. And yeah, it's got Rose Byrne and she's charming, and it's got Donald Gleason and he's a lot of fun to watch in a slapstick comedy. But this looks awful, and I'm not surprised. Even though I know for a fact Sony could send it to me because they've sent me movies in the past, they just don't want to know what we think about it. So what does that mean, kiddos? This means it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about In the Heights and Wish Dragon. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about In the Heights. This big screen adaptation of Lin-Manuel Miranda's award-winning musical plays tribute to the people and the culture of a neighborhood in New York City. New York City!
There's a breeze off the Hudson, and just when you think you're sick of living here, the memory floods in, the morning light off the fire escapes, the nights in Bennett Park blasting Big Pun tapes.
It's a story of a block that was disappearing. Once upon a time, in a faraway land called Washington Heights.
Who's gonna notice we're gone?
Ooh. When it came to dreams, we had to keep scraping by.
I want to start off by saying I'm not a huge fan of musicals. I was when I was younger. I got more into musicals, but as I've gotten older, I've become a curmudgeon, and I'm not a huge fan of musicals. There are some that I think are fine, but one of my complaints about a lot of musicals is there's a lot of numbers in there. There's so many songs that don't really do anything to the plot. They are just there to say, okay, we're going to do a song and dance number. And that works. I mean, I'm not questioning that formula because obviously people on Broadway love it and people who see musical theater and movies love it as well. I'm just saying that's something I'm not a big fan of. Like a great movie musical, in my opinion, or a great musical in itself, is something like Jesus Christ Superstar. Because every single song propels the story. And every single song either gives you a revelation of a character and it moves the story along. I remember seeing the, like, the NBC musical version of A Christmas Story, and or even like something like Young Frankenstein. I love the original Young Frankenstein and the original Christmas Story. Like, there was that song, he was my boyfriend in Young Frankenstein, and I'm like, it's a throwaway one-liner in a movie that they devote an entire 3-minute song to. And they do this whole thing about the dad of, he is the king of Cleveland Street in A Christmas Story, and that just, it's unnecessary, and it, to me, it feels like padding. With that said, In the Heights is just that, very much so. And that's okay, because that's the purpose of it. The purpose of this movie is not telling this hard-fought story through line. The purpose of this movie is to give this mosaic of this neighborhood, or the purpose of the play and the musical. So that didn't bother me with this. I mean, it does run a little bit long. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes. But that makes sense for a Broadway production that's been adapted for the screen. So that, again, didn't really even bother me. I mean, I thought this movie was quite good. It was funny, I connected way more to it than I did when Hamilton came on to Disney Plus, partly because this one shot for the screen, whereas Hamilton is just a filmed performance. You only can get that much into it in a film performance. I think you have to actually shoot it for a movie to really connect with the material from a cinematic level. And I'll tell you, John Chu does a great job putting this movie together. And he's got history. He did the Step Up movies. He did the Justin Bieber movies. Whether you like him or not, he knows how to do music video style stuff. And this is a vibrant, exciting, energetic, colorful, wonderful, happy, and sad at sometimes, and realistic look at a community in New York City. It absolutely serves a purpose it needs to do. And the music's very, very good. I don't know the lyrics very well, so they go by fast. And that can be a challenge. So a lot of times I found myself just watching the production numbers. But I mean, they're showstoppers, a lot of them. They do some great visualizations of dance and performance. And I was surprised at how much I did enjoy this because, like I said, I was like, I think Lin-Manuel Miranda, he has that, it's very typical cadence in terms of how he does that half rap, half singing soundtrack. And you get that with Hamilton. And I think a lot of people would say he perfected it with Hamilton. But in some ways, I think this one works better because it fits more with the culture of the movie itself, whereas Hamilton is meant to be anachronistic in that way. And that works, and it's very interesting. But there's a little bit more authenticness to In the Heights. I mean, this is a great movie. If you love musicals and you want to see the production, I've never seen the stage production, but I've been told that that's very similar, very, very vibrant and energetic and explosive and you want to watch the musical numbers. And you can say, well, while they have a couple characters and we do kind of follow their stories, it's not about them. And I would be hesitant to call them even main characters because it's about the neighborhood. And each song and dance tells a story of an aspect or a piece of the neighborhood. So yeah, I'm going to have to say, I was surprised at how much I did enjoy this one. I would say, you know, this is one that's a toss up. Do you want to see it in theaters? I imagine in a big crowd, it's good with the soundtrack and the big screen. But on the other hand, you know, at home, you can turn on the subtitles. You actually catch the lyrics because they fly by so fast. You may not catch them. But still, I mean, I think you can have a great time seeing this in the theaters. You want to get the most out of it. I think it would be a theatrical movie. You know, and then you can just go home and watch it a couple more times on HBO Max. And that's the beauty of this day and date system that they have set up. So I'm going to have to say In the Heights totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Wish Dragon, which is on Netflix. A poor young man in China finds a jade teapot that contains a magical dragon that will grant him 3 wishes.
Greetings, great master. The heavens have opened.
Your wishes will be...
Oh, a peasant boy. Well, this'll be easy.
I know what you're thinking.
Could this be real? Is magic real?
Yes, it's real.
I am a wish dragon who will grant 3 wishes to the owner of this teapot.
Most people will recognize pretty quickly that this is essentially the Aladdin story. It's a Chinese version of the Aladdin story. It's not him being a thief, but it is him finding this lamp or this jade teapot, finding a genie or a wish dragon in it that's going to grant him 3 wishes, can't fall in love with people, can't bring anyone back from the dead, has a lot of the same scenes. And one of my criticisms of this movie is it does at times almost reshoot some of the stuff from Disney's Aladdin. But it does go outside of that. At some point, I keep waiting for the dragon to break the fourth wall and say, okay, look, well, I know this is Aladdin. And we've done all these scenes and, you know, we make the jokes about living in the bottle and we make the jokes about how long I've been and we make the rules of the wishes. I mean, it is laid out exactly like Aladdin, but it does eventually, once it gets past what that is, it does deviate it from it a little bit. But I mean, you still have a bad guy coming after him because they want the dragon to grant the bad guy wishes. But there is a charm to it for sure. I thought the voice cast was fantastic. And the animation is different enough from what you would get in a Disney cartoon to get you away from worrying that it's a rehash of Aladdin. And there's nothing wrong with that, really. Aladdin is the Persian story of granting wishes. This is the Chinese story of it. And it's the same sort of thing. And you know, 3 wishes is a very common type of story to tell. And this one works. I did enjoy it. I think the story is good enough. I think it's something you watch with the family. It's enjoyable. It's a quick, breezy movie. I think it's about an hour and 40 minutes. It's on Netflix, so you can watch it as a family. It's part of their Representation Matters, because, of course, Netflix has done a bunch of Asian-oriented movies. I mean, Over the Moon last year, which got nominated, I believe, for an Oscar. That one is a Chinese story as well. And the other thing is when you get to the nuance behind the generic story, it does have a lot of the Asian influences. If you've watched enough movies from China and Japan over the years, you recognize things that don't quite ring as Western. They're much more adapted to the Asian cultures, and they have that in this movie. And that's cool because it is that different perspective. So I'm going to say I enjoyed this one. It's cute and it's clever. And I think the family's going to like it. So I'm going to have to say that Wish Dragon kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Time Wasters and Awake, as well as the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the amusement park. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the final reviews. And the first one I want to talk about is a series called Time Wasters. This British television series follows a struggling jazz quartet from London who time travel back to the 1920s and discover a small measure of fame.
Guys!
I think I found a time machine.
People like us never get to time travel. It's what white people do, like skiing or brunch.
We are a jazz quartet in the golden era of jazz.
What's done is done, Jace. I don't live in the past.
I mean, I do, literally, but you get my point.
This series actually was produced, I think, in 2017 in the UK. And it's just kind of finally made its way across the pond. And it's part of IMDb TV, which is branded up through Amazon Prime. It's 6 episodes long, which is typical for a British series. And it's a comedy, so it's a little bit lighthearted. But yeah, it's this jazz quartet. It's 3 black guys and a black girl. And it's important to know that what their race is, because they time travel back to the 20s, and it's not America. It's they're still in London. But, you know, hey, racism is kind of universal and does kind of go back many decades for all different cultures. But it has some really clever bits. It pokes fun at institutional racism while not getting overly preachy or woke about it. It's a whimsical approach to it. And it has a whimsical approach to sort of the different levels of society in terms of monetary wealth, because they kind of hook up with this brother-sister couple who are the idle rich. And that's kind of what they plug into, and they find a little bit of success, and they have temptation in there. And, you know, it's sometimes they're treated like people. Sometimes they're almost treated like more servants like, and it examines that but without like overly preaching stuff. It's more this whimsical look at racism as it was in the UK, which is also neat to watch from an American perspective, because this is another country they're talking about, but they still have a lot of the issues that we have here. So, I mean, this is a clever series, and it's a lot of fun. It's 6 episodes, each a half hour. It breezes through, and it doesn't take itself too seriously. So I gotta say, I enjoyed the heck out of Time Wasters. I know there's another season out there, so hopefully they'll import that in the next 6 months to a year. So I'm gonna say Time Wasters totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the movie Awake, which is on Netflix. A mysterious event causes everyone on Earth to lose the ability to sleep, throwing the world into chaos.
15 hours ago, something happened. We don't know what caused it or why it occurred. But what we do know is that none of us can sleep.
48 hours of no sleep, there's a loss of critical thinking.
It's gonna be total chaos. But what about after 5 or 6 days? We're all gonna die if we don't solve this.
It's meant to be a thriller, almost it plays it a bit as a horror story, but it's a thriller with this mild science fiction undertone to it, because something happens, there's some sort of event, then they don't even explain. I think they try to explain it near the end, but they really don't tell you what happens. Just suddenly, nobody's able to sleep. Something happens to everyone's brains that they can't shut them off and go to sleep. And there's this woman who is trying to save her kids and keep them safe. Because as you get more and more sleep deprived, you start acting weird and you start having hallucinations and cognitive functions fall apart. And that's the whole point, is that, you know, society will break down in a week. And this woman's daughter is able to sleep, and that makes her very valuable because people want to study her and find out if they can turn this back on everybody else. And I think that's a brilliant setup. And I love the concept. And, you know, sometimes there are movies, I was talking to my wife, she's like, I like the fact that when there's a movie that's not your cup of tea, that you will acknowledge that and say, if you like this sort of thing, you'll like it. Here's the thing. This movie is my cup of tea. I love these kind of speculative fiction pieces. The problem is, this is very poorly done. There was so much opportunity in terms of filmmaking style to see the deterioration of cognitive functions through the eyes of the camera, to start to get disoriented, to start to see hallucinations. I mean, they play around with it like way near the end of the movie, but you would love to see that gradual going mad feel, but it just feels like it's just normally filming it. Well, you could really put the viewer in this. And the characters, even if they're sleep deprived, they do stupid things and don't think ahead. Even the ones that aren't sleep deprived. The other problem is things collapse way too quickly. I mean, things collapse in like 6 hours. Whereas it should take a day or two of not sleeping to really have people go bonkers. But people like go bonkers a couple hours later. And that's a weak storytelling element. And the way it ends, it's trying to be smart, but if you know anything about biology, you're like, well, that's not how it works. You should have just made it mysterious. You know what I mean? So I did not like this at all. I thought this was a squandered opportunity, and ultimately it sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on the amusement park, and this is a lost film of George A. Romero, which looks at the dangers of American life as one grows old.
Ah, two young lovers. You want your fortune told.
We want to see what our life is going to be like.
What part of life?
When we get old.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
You must see it all to the end.
There's nothing outside. I'm going outside anyway.
One of these times, the door will open in your life, and you will step into the amusement park.
Now, you have to understand where it came from. It's about an hour long. It's like 53 minutes. It's exclusively playing on Shudder. I know it's being shown in some theaters, but it dropped on Shudder this week, which is the streaming service for horror and thriller type genre work. Apparently what happened is, I think it was the Lutheran Society in Pittsburgh, hired George Romero to make a movie about elder abuse and ageism back in the early 70s. And he put this movie together, and they presented it to him, and they immediately shelved it because it was just too disturbing. Would you have to sit there and go, what the heck was going through their mind? Part of the Lutheran church was like, you know, let's do a public service video. Let's get the guy who made that movie about the dead raising from the earth and eating the flesh of the living. He's our Lutheran guy. I don't know why they tapped George Romero at all. I mean, he had done a romantic comedy like in 1971. So maybe they saw that instead. Even then, I think he was best known for Night of the Living Dead. No wonder you got something that's disturbing. So they shelved it and then just disappeared from existence until somebody like in 2017 found a copy of it, and they screened it at some festivals, and they got a 4K scan and everything, and they've restored it. And knowing that is important, because when you watch the movie, it's clearly highlighting problems that old people have. And what's kind of terrifying about it, it's the kind of stuff old people are running into now. People taking advantage of them, overcharging them for medical stuff, people trying to scam them, people trying to get them into real estate deals that they don't understand, you know, hard sell type stuff, people, you know, abusing them or marginalizing them or just outright stealing their money. So there's all these things that can happen as an old person that are still happening today. So it does feel at times like the most twisted public service video you're ever going to see. And it's disturbing and weird and creepy, but it never quite shakes that reality that it's meant to bring a spotlight to ageism and elder abuse. So it is a little bit preachy at that point, because it's clear that that's what they're trying to do. In that sense, Romero was doing exactly what his bosses told him to. But it is disturbing, and part of what makes it disturbing is that aesthetic of the 1970s. It was made in 1973, shot on 16mm, so it, you know, it looks like a horror movie. It looks like, you know, something that he made before his movies like Martin and Season of the Witch and stuff like that, or The Crazies. And it has that almost documentary style that The Crazies had. So it certainly feels like a Romero movie, especially an early Romero movie. And in that sense, it's really interesting to watch. Fans of George Romero are going to like it. I think if you swerve into it not knowing the history behind it, it's going to be a little confusing. But overall, it's a fantastic look at an absolute failure of what it was supposed to do, but at the same time, also being pretty effective in what it did, to the point that the company that commissioned it didn't want to continue. So I'm going to say it's worth seeing. It's worth checking out, especially if you're a Romero fan. The amusement park kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it. I got to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard and Luca. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.